You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, let's go fishing with magnets, but not for fish. A magnet fisher tells us how he hunts for treasure and finds trash in Wisconsin waterways. First, a national Latino convention is kicking off in Milwaukee today, and it's getting attention from some Democratic presidential candidates. Tomorrow evening, four Democrats running for president will participate in a town hall-style discussion that includes Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Julian Castro, and Beto O'Rourke. Domingo Garcia is the national president of the League of United Latin American Citizens. They'll be co-hosting that town hall with Univision tomorrow. Domingo, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here in Milwaukee. It's a lot cooler than Texas.
Now, before we get to this town hall, Domingo, can you tell us a little bit about this convention? Drawing, I saw numbers like 15,000 people or so to Milwaukee.
Sure. For those of you who don't know LULAC, LULAC is the League of United Latin American Citizens. It's the oldest Latin American civil rights organization in the country, founded in 1929, and the largest, with over 140,000 members in 44 states. And we're meeting or having our national convention here in Milwaukee. We're expecting about 15 to 20,000 people that will come over the next 4 or 5 days, with an impact of about $15 to $20 million for the Milwaukee economy.
Now, you've got Democratic presidential candidates. I understand you invited the president to attend as well. What kind of things are you looking to get takes on from the candidates when they show up?
Well, you know, Latino issues are American issues. There are, you know, what's your positions on health care? For a lot of families, you know, they're just one paycheck away or an illness away from losing everything they got. So we want to make sure, what can we do to make sure that health care for all or Medicare for all is a doable legislative priority? Education for, I'm the first generation college graduate in my family. I'm the oldest of seven and the first one to graduate from college and law school. And there's a lot of people out there that need opportunities and help, whether that's with tuition-free universities or colleges or financial assistance to make sure that they can achieve their American dream. And then finally, you know, I was in Clint, Texas about 2 weeks ago. When they talk about concentration camps on the border, those are real. Those are not make-believe. I've actually been in Germany and Poland, and I've seen concentration camps. And when you have barbed wire, you have fences, you got armed guards, armed towers. But here, the inmates are 2, 4, 6, and 8-year-old refugees that have been taken from their parents. And that's just something that we as Americans, we as Christians, whatever your religious belief, should not, as a moral, on a moral basis, allow. And that's almost like spitting at the face of the Statue of Liberty and what America stands for. So we're definitely going to be asking what their positions are on immigration reform.
Domingo, I think sometimes political observers equate the Latino or Hispanic vote with immigration issues and only immigration issues. From your answer there, it's clearly more than just that.
That's correct. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, we have businesses. A lot of the most small businesses are now Latino started and Latino run. High tech in Silicon Valley in California, transportation. So we're involved at all levels, and we're trying to move that. For example, one of the issues that comes up in our convention are veterans. A large percentage of our membership are veterans who have been in Iraq, Afghanistan, and they come home, and there's nobody to help them when they have post-traumatic stress syndrome, and they wind up self-medicating, and the VA hospitals are not taking care of them. And so we're, you know, we're going to have the Secretary of the Veterans Affairs and Secretary of Defense answer those questions from our vets at our convention.
Domingo Garcia is with us, national president of the League of United Latin American Citizens. Their convention starts today in Milwaukee. It includes Democratic presidential candidates. Domingo, an Univision poll from June showed that 77% of Latino voters agreed that when it comes to immigration, quoting from the poll here, some Democratic politicians take Latino immigrants' support for granted. End quote. Do you see that as a problem for Democrats?
Look, we need to find a bipartisan immigration reform package that we agree. We need to secure our border. We need to close the asylum loopholes. But we also need to treat those refugees that are on the border humanely, decently, and give them an administrative process to try to determine if their asylum claims are legit or not. But we also have 12 to 13 million immigrants that are already in this country, most of them hardworking. You know, Milwaukee was built by immigrants who, through their sweat, their blood, their labor, are making America what it is today in terms of its economic powerhouse. And they need an opportunity through an immigration reform bill that allows them to apply, pay a fine, learn English, and become U.S. residents with an opportunity to become citizens at some future date. And it's going to take Republicans coming from the far right, about enforcement only toward the middle, and Democrats who are on the far left who think that we should have open borders and we should just give immigrants everything they want to come also to the middle. Both extremes are wrong.
Now, you're in Milwaukee, and I think if you ask people around the country about cities with lots of Latino voters in them, Milwaukee might not leap to mind. We might know a little different here in Wisconsin. What brought the convention to Milwaukee this year?
Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, Trump won Wisconsin, but I think by less than 20,000-something votes. Latinos are now almost 6% of the voting age population of Wisconsin. We believe we can nudge that number up to 10%, and that might be the difference in 2020. But Wisconsin's also a swing state, and that's why we're here. Wisconsin is also a growing Latino population. The Mexican fiestas that they have here in Milwaukee are some of the largest events here. And so we decided that this is the center right now of 2020. The Democratic National Convention is going to be here next year. So we wanted to make sure that the Democratic candidates, the Republican candidates know that the Latino vote cannot be taken for granted and you're going to have to earn it.
Is there such a thing as the Latino vote? I hear some people say, well, wait a minute, you're talking about people from lots of different national origins. You're talking about people who may have been here, their family for one generation or 15 generations. There's so much variety.
That's true. I mean, we're not a monolith. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is Mexican-Americans in California or Texas or and here in Milwaukee have different priorities than, say, Puerto Ricans in Orlando or Puerto Rico who are concerned about hurricane relief or Cuban-Americans who are concerned about the embargo against Cuba. But as Latinos, we have a lot more things that bring us together. Just as Americans, we have a lot more things that unite us and divide us. And the Latino votes are there to those candidates who are making sure they do talk about healthcare, education, talk about economic opportunities in this country, and who are not using us as political piñatas and bashing immigrants or doing voter suppression like we've seen with putting a citizenship question on the census or trying to purge voters or trying to make it difficult to register to vote, which we've seen in states around the country. So that's why we're here. Wisconsin is at the middle of the 2020 historical elections.
Apart from election-related issues, what else is going on at this big convention in Milwaukee this week?
We got a lot of things going on. We got young people talking about what's going on in the colleges and campuses in terms of education opportunities. We have a large, almost over 1,000 college students coming throughout the U.S. here. We are also going to be dealing with issues like the census to make sure every person is counted so that we have an adequate census that allows for dollars to flow to those states that need them based on population. And then finally, you know, we actually have a lot of folks talking about, like, we have the new heavyweight champion of the world, Andy Ruiz, who did a spectacular upset. The real Rocky Balboa will be here Friday night, as well as, by the way, you mentioned the presidential candidates that were here for our town hall, but Senator Cory Booker is going to be here. So is Governor Senator Bennett from Colorado. We're actually going to have 9 presidential candidates here. And who knows? You know, I hear Trump's going to be here Friday. I don't think it's a coincidence that he's coming Friday after our town hall meeting and during the LULAC convention.
Domingo, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Domingo Garcia, national president of the League of United Latin American Citizens. He was with us today to talk about the group's big convention this week in Milwaukee. It includes a town hall featuring Democratic presidential hopefuls and visits from others. If you want to tune in, that discussion starts at 6 Central Time tomorrow evening. You can stream it on your local Univision channel or the Univision Facebook or YouTube pages. Coming up, if you like strong magnets and searching for treasure at the bottom of a body of water and you don't mind getting wet, we have a new hobby for you. Stay with us on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, learn about a new hobby that combines fishing and magnets, but maybe not the way you think. Right now, it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a disappearing crop.
Tobacco used to be a major cash crop in Wisconsin, but today, very few farms remain, and they're primarily located in southeast Dane County. Kristen Durst introduces us to one of these rare tobacco farmers who's keeping the Wisconsin agricultural tradition alive.
Kurt Watson is a fourth-generation tobacco farmer.
Yeah, I just painted this shed here. It's kind of old, but I have no clue how old this thing is. It's probably, I don't know, 1920s maybe, I don't know.
He farms 8 acres near Edgerton. That's down from 14 acres just a few years ago.
It's hard to invest a lot of money into tobacco because they don't know how long it's going to be around.
The government used to subsidize the industry, but it was deregulated around 15 years ago. And a federal tobacco buyout program to help ease farmers into an unregulated market made its last payments nearly 5 years ago. On this late summer day, Watson is harvesting tobacco with his family. They cut each stalk by hand, spear it, and string it on a wood lathe.
basically after we cut it, you know, it'll lay here. If we got a good sunny day, lay here for a couple hours, and then it will wilt down, and the leaves get really pliable, kind of like a rubber-like, and then it's really easy for us to string up, and then get it to the tobacco shed to dry.
Good, huh? Good.
In Wisconsin, the varieties grown are solely for chewing tobacco. It's an incredibly labor-intensive crop, yet another reason why there are so few tobacco farmers in the state today.
The thing about tobacco is you handle the plant so many times. You handle it when you're planting, you handle it when you're topping, you handle it when you're cutting, you handle it when you're stringing. And then you load it, you take it to the shed, you handle it there twice. Then you take it down, you take it into where you strip the leaves off, and then you put it in the bundle box, and you haul the bales to market.
And Watson says it's hard to find manual labor, which is why family and friends are essential.
Can you teach me how to tie that?
Tobacco hangs and dries in the shed all fall and is ready for sale now that the moist winter air has made it more pliable. Watson's family and friends have just stripped the leaves off of each stalk. They're compressing and tying them into bundles for market. His mom, Marjorie Furseth, says this gathering is tradition.
We have a lot of fun being together. That's why we do this once a year. The whole family clan gets together and we strip for Kurt just to get together.
And while they are together, they talk a lot about tobacco and its rich history. Watson and his neighbor, Sheldon Shield, both have deep roots.
You know, I just think back of all of the farmers that grew tobacco, and a lot of those guys aren't with us anymore. They're not around, and that next generation's not willing to take it on. It's kind of sad in a way. I mean, it's definitely the heritage of this area. I mean, there's farms around here that were paid with tobacco money, and it's just kind of getting to be a thing of the past for the most part. So
going to town and see all the big houses. They're owned by the tobacco barons, the ones that bought the tobacco. Yeah. There are some huge ones in town.
Yeah, there was probably, 25 or more tobacco companies at one time? I mean,
Watson says while it's a little sad to reflect on the plight of tobacco in Wisconsin, there's also a lot to cherish, largely because he has so many fond memories, working with his father and grandfather, and the ones he's making in the tobacco fields with his kids.
I don't know if I know any different. You know, I've been brought up this way, and I just enjoy it. So I'm sure it's going to go away someday, but I'll probably be one of the last ones doing it.
That story came to us from Kristen Durst, who lives in Madison. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lola Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
Now, there's a new hobby gaining some steam in Wisconsin, magnet fishing. It involves people tying really strong magnets to long ropes and fishing for objects at the bottom of rivers or lakes. Sometimes people get trash, sometimes they find some interesting stuff. Jim Walters is a magnet fishing enthusiast and the operator of Magnet Fishing Wisco. Jim, thanks for joining us today.
You bet. Happy to be here.
Well, now, magnet fishing, the name deceived me a little. Nothing to do with actual fish, right?
No, nothing to do with actual fishing that we do here in Wisconsin with bait and a hook. Yeah.
Now, how did you first run across this idea of fishing for metal stuff that's hidden underwater?
You know, I got a metal detector for Christmas one year and was on YouTube trying to figure out how this contraption worked. And then I kind of came across a common thread of this magnet fishing hobby, which stemmed from over in Europe. Catching things in the canals and the riverways. And I was on YouTube for hours and hours watching these guys pull metal with these ropes and this weird looking hockey puck shaped magnet. And I was kind of hooked. I was kind of hooked at that point. So,
what kind of things have you caught when you've been out magnet fishing in Wisconsin?
Well, Wisconsin's a little bit different. You know, a lot of people are catching war artifacts and this and that. And here in Wisconsin, a lot of it is things left over from fishing, dropped knives, dropped fishing poles, pliers. The other thing we're finding a lot of is bikes, razor scooters, anything that's not nailed down, maybe in a park, that usually gets tossed in, you know, garbage cans and benches. I've come across some interesting finds in certain areas. A couple guns here and there, a lot of signs. Pretty much anything you can think of that might be either hidden, tossed, you know, or dropped accidentally. So
let's talk about these magnets here. This isn't our everyday refrigerator magnet, right?
No, they are actually neodymium magnets. So what that means is they are usually high power. They have a pretty good lift. They range in anywhere on the internet from, say, 300-pound lift to 1,200, 1,500-pound lift.
Wow. Okay. What's the biggest thing? What's the heaviest thing you've snagged with one of these magnets?
I think the heaviest thing I've gotten was probably a cast iron sign from a bridge builder. From the early 1900s, they used to weld on their plaques on these bridges. A company out of Chicago, 1900, the Lassig Bridge and Steel Company. So I latched onto this thing, and there was a big click on the line, and I realized, oh, this is a little bit bigger than your typical stuff. So I got my brother and my teenage son, and we yanked that thing out of there, and I judge it was probably about 110, 120 pounds. So,
what do you do with all the stuff when you bring it up?
Well, I would say 90% of what we bring up is usually garbage. A lot of it is, say, fishing line, hooks, tin cans. A lot of it we go ahead and properly dispose of. I would say maybe about 10% is actual items that maybe we could clean up and repurpose. And a little bit of that amount is stuff we could actually clean up, maybe soak, and then wire brush and clean. And maybe we could actually sell some of that stuff. So we've come across some items, and it's definitely not a treasure hunting, money-making hobby as of yet.
So. Now you're trying to encourage other people in Wisconsin to do this. And one of your big messages, it seems like, is clean up after yourself. Don't leave the stuff on the shore. Don't throw it back in the water after you find it.
Right. And then that's kind of been a problem. I think over in Europe, we're seeing a lot of posts with everyone's kind of jumping on board with this new hobby. And what comes with that is I think people who really want to get those treasure items, those key items, and everything they bring up, a lot of people have been just leaving on the shores, along the canals. And kind of like we discussed, some friends that are involved in magnet fishing, now they are enacting ordinances and laws and some signage to kind of keep the hobby at bay because of the mess. So we always encourage whatever you bring up, it definitely doesn't belong there, and properly dispose of.
You know, you've got these big, powerful magnets. How do you handle that around other metal stuff in your life?
Well, I always stress safety and caution. These magnets are very powerful, and if fingers or any parts of your body get caught between the magnet and a large piece of metal, it's going to have disastrous consequences. So I always have mine in a large kind of a couple buckets, and I also have a couple boxes that are kind of sealed up a little bit. So that's how we transfer them. We're very careful, especially when you're out there and you're all excited and you're tossing your magnet in. You always have to be aware of all the large metal around you. So, I've gotten stuck on bridges and I've gotten stuck on all sorts of things. And sometimes you just have to cut the rope. Sometimes you just have to say goodbye. So, yeah, always exercise caution with these high-powered magnets, for sure.
If somebody's out there listening, Jim, and thinking, yeah, this sounds cool, I want to try some magnet fishing, how do you suggest they get started?
How I would get started is do a little bit of legwork, do a little bit of research, get on some of these threads, some of these Reddit threads, some of these YouTube videos, kind of read the reviews. With the popularity of the hobby, now comes kind of cheap knockoffs, and everyone's kind of rushing to have their own magnet for sale and their own. So I would definitely read the reviews, use the internet, and Amazon has magnets for sale, neodymium magnets, and eBay and certain vendors online. So definitely get out there, do some education, and really, you know, do your research, what works best, and ask your fellow magnet fishermen. You know, ask what works, what knot can I use, and, you know, so you're kind of off and running at that point. So,
and do you have a next excursion planned, Jim?
I'm kind of plotting out. So I use Google Maps. And I do a lot of historical research here in Wisconsin. And I'm kind of plotting out, I don't mind giving away the location, I'm plotting out Green Bay. Up in Green Bay, a lot of bridges, a lot of waterways, a lot of opportunity for things tossed in. And so we're kind of plotting out kind of a two-day, three-day thing up in Green Bay.
Happy fishing, Jim. Thanks a lot for joining us.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
Jim Walters is a magnet fisher from West Bend and moderator of Magnet Fishing Wisco. He joins us today to talk about magnet fishing and some of his best ever finds. Coming up, we'll learn about a new program that aims to provide zero interest loans for low to middle income students in Wisconsin and some of the challenges of high student loan debt facing incoming college freshmen this fall. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. Listening to Central Time, I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up tomorrow at 8 on The Morning Show, Kate Archer-Kent talks to the author of the book Why Cities Lose, who says changing politics and geography in the United States often leaves cities without support from key leaders in state and national government. That's tomorrow morning at 8 on The Morning Show. Now, for many students, taking out loans to pay for college is the inevitable price to pay if they want to further their education. The trade-off is that a college degree is supposed to be a ticket to a good-paying job to help pay off those loans. That hasn't always worked out for everyone, though, especially since the Great Recession, with estimates putting student loan debt collectively at more than $1.5 trillion in the United States. The issue isn't going away anytime soon. A new organization in the Madison area aims to help solve some of the problems associated with college debt by providing students from low to middle-income households with zero-interest loans in order to help them get a leg up. Masood Akhtar is an entrepreneur and founder of the new nonprofit Empowering Students for Success, as well as the group United Against Hate. Masood, thanks a lot for coming to the studio.
Thanks for having us here.
And Sam Salkowski is an incoming senior at Mount Horeb High School. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Masood, what inspired you to want to start this program?
Well, the idea has been floating around in my mind for a while. And because of my background, you know, I'm originally from India. I came to this country over 35 years ago, and I gave up my citizenship over 20 years ago. So I grew up in an environment of education. My father was a teacher. We grew up in a very small group, seven family members, total nine. So education was number one. So education is really my passion, the way I grew up, and it's still with me. One of the things I started realizing that when people look at the unemployment rate of 3% or low, whether it is in Wisconsin or any other states, it's good. But at the same time, when you dig down deep into reality of what's happening, then you find out about 40% of Americans are still struggling daily, which bill they have to pay. And that, to me, is how should we address that issue. At the same time, when I was working on We Are Many United Against Hate, when I founded that movement, we started realizing that economic insecurity is really becoming a breeding ground for hate. And some of these people, if they don't go to college and they're available, they really become the prime target for these hate groups. And that started bothering us and our advisory board members. So we decided, okay, we got to do something about that. And one of the things is we really want to help these people from low and medium income families, regardless of their religion, color, or ethnicity, to go to college and have a creative mechanism in place so they can be successful. In addition, the idea is, which is unique, to build an inclusive community at the same time.
We'll get into more about how that works. Sam, I want to bring you in. You're on the board, I think, with United Against Hate. But let's talk about you as an incoming high school senior for a moment. What concerns do you and your classmates have when it comes to looking at the cost of college?
So just as you look, there's so many options, right? And with all these options, you choose one place that you want to go, or you choose three places that you want to go. And assuming you get in to the place you want to go, your dream school, there's still that consequence of quite possibly very large loans, debt that lasts you maybe a decade. And I think that's really a scary prospect for a lot of kids, especially when they're leaving the household and, you know, they're protected by their parents for, you know, 18 years, and then all of a sudden they're kicked out and shoved into debt.
Now, Masood, let's talk about how this would work. You're fundraising to try to make this a reality. Now, what do you envision this doing for students? It's partly the interest-free loans, and it's more than that, too.
Yeah, it's not. I just want to make sure that you review your people who are listening to this have a clear understanding of what we are trying to do. It's not just interest-free loan. What we are trying to do is empower these students to go to college and graduate with great GPA. So 0% interest financing is just one tool that we are offering. And it's also tied with jobs. So when you graduate, we sit down and figure this out, how you're going to pay it back. So that's that. But the other thing that I realized, talking to people nationally and in Wisconsin, that a lot of these parents, particularly single parents, are not educated enough in terms of opportunities. You know, when to apply for a scholarship, when to apply for assistantship, what those future would look like and what really needs to be done. I'm putting together a list of those mentors with different fields of specialization. The other part of that is going to be different fields of specialization, but also diversity of people. And here's the idea behind that. So when you request, let's assume, a $25,000 loan, we're going to ask you, what do you want to become? Is that a 2-year associate degree or a 4-year? What's your area of specialization? And let's see if you say mechanical engineer. We're going to say, okay, we have a volunteer who graduated from mechanical engineering, agreed to be your mentor over the next 2 to 4 years, work with you through the process, through job opportunities and when to apply and all of those things. But at the same time, this mentor will not be the same as you are. So if you are a white guy looking for this, the mentor may not be the same person. Because what I want to do through this, build this relationship between different communities over the next 4 years as a part of that, so they can also understand that. The other unique feature of this, I want to make sure these guys get good paying job. And the thing is that if they get a 3.91 GPA out of 4, their loan is completely forgiven. In exchange, what we are asking them to do, simply become the mentor for other people, because then they're going to go and recycle this. And the other item that's critical for this is that obviously it's a loan. So the money is going to come back to this nonprofit organization. So this is a very sustainable model to empower our students.
We're talking about a new nonprofit in Wisconsin called Empowering Students for Success. It aims ultimately to help provide students from low to middle income households with zero interest loans and other services, mentorship, among other things, as we've been hearing. We have Masood Akhtar with us and Sam Salkowski, incoming senior at Mount Horeb High School. Sam, you're a student, but you're involved in organizations with Masood here. What's leading you to get involved, not just, you know, looking out at your own college career, but getting involved in these issues with United Against Hate and now with this new effort?
I think it's really important to consider others in your journey throughout your life, right? And I think my life going forward could certainly, I could avoid all of these things and probably get to the same point. But the people who you interact with matter too. And when you can make a difference without, you know, impeding your own progress, and when you can make a difference, even if it does take some sacrifice, I think that's worth it.
And what do you think of this idea Masood's been talking about of mentorship? So it's not just about the loans, but the idea of getting that one-on-one work in whatever your field happens to be.
Well, I mean, the feeling of confusion and feeling lost when you're going into this big new experience of college and not knowing what you're doing, I think it's really important that you have someone who's successful, someone who knows what they're doing, and someone who's not like you, who can take you through the steps, encourage you, and give you opportunities that you might not otherwise have.
Now, Masood, you're this is on the ground floor here, but you've brought a bunch of stakeholders from around the state on board. Can you talk about some of the people who are getting involved in this effort at the outset?
Yeah, I think that was my starting point. I just want to make sure that people who are associated with university, for example, or colleges, and even though in a nonpartisan way, so we have, for example, John Wiley, the former chancellor, on the board. Kevin Riley, the former president of UW System, is on that. And think about MITC folks on this. At the same time, you know, Scott, the president of Edgewood College, is on that. Also, we have a representative from Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, because my intent is to keep it nonpartisan, but bring those people who are business-oriented, at the same time have affiliation with the university, so we do things properly.
Now, the interest-free loan, how much of a difference does that interest make for students, given the interest rates that student loans are under right now?
Well, students still have to pay the interest rate, you know, 5 to 6%, even more than a bank can borrow from the same thing. But the critical point is that, let's assume when they graduate, 6 months after graduation, it doesn't matter whether the economy is doing good or bad. If they don't have a job, they have to start paying back. And what happens in that situation is that although you got a degree, you were looking for a better job, they have nothing to do with the economy. And then all of a sudden, they have to work somewhere at $7 an hour because they have to pay interest, they have to pay loan. That's the reason in this model is not just the interest-free, but we want to make sure it's tied with their job. And then the mentorship and other opportunities, and if you get 3.91 out of 4 is forgiven, there's so many of those incentives out there, because the ultimate goal is you graduate with the best GPA possible, a strong curriculum, and a strong resume that you build, then you can be successful, and then you do exactly what Empowering Student for Success is planning to do. The thing that bothers me a little bit, you know, when I look at Wisconsin, only 29% people right now have an undergraduate degree. That, from my perspective, is significantly low. I think we really need to go and talk with these students and explain to them the importance of getting higher education.
We're talking to Masood Akhtar and Sam Salkowski about a new organization that aims to provide zero-interest college loans to low- and middle-income students here in Wisconsin. Masood Akhtar is an entrepreneur, founder of the new nonprofit Empowering Students for Success. Sam is an incoming senior at Mount Horeb High School. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this idea? What questions do you have about how it works? And what experience do you have? Are you or your family dealing with big student loan debt? Are you shopping for college right now? Are you trying to pay off loan debt 5 years or 15 years after graduation? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about a new organization that's aiming to provide zero-interest college loans to low- and middle-income students, as well as career advice, mentorship, and other assistance. Our guests are Masood Akhtar and Sam Salkowski. They're both involved with the project. They're both also involved with the group United Against Hate. Sam is a soon-to-be senior at Mount Horeb High School. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this idea? Do you have questions about how this could work? Do we need more programs like this to try to tackle student loan debt? And what's your own story when it comes to dealing with the costs of higher education? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll go to your calls now. We've got Steve on the line in Sussex. Steve, hi.
Hello.
What do you want to bring up, Steve?
Just a couple things that I think that the student loan debt thing that everybody's talking about. My daughter's going to college, and she has probably about $60,000 debt right now. But some kids go to school, like, and they go to like Yale or whatever, or even Madison, and knowing that it's super expensive, or you can go to a cheaper school, get the same degree, and have half as much debt. And also the other thing is, like, the kind of degrees kids are getting. Like, do we need 16th century European art history majors? No, we need welders and printers and plumbers. I think kids are being pushed into four-year degrees when it's totally not necessary.
Steve, thanks a lot for the call. Masood, in counseling for students that you work with, will you look at things like, you know, the affordability of this college versus that, and the employability of this major versus that?
Yes, I think that will be a part of the mentorship as well. Then people will apply for it. We're going to have a mentor work with them to help them with whatever help that's needed.
Thanks for the call, Steve. Is that part of the goal, though, to maybe provide access to what might be a more expensive school than a low-income household would ordinarily be able to think about?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
Oh, is part of your goal to help provide access to something that a lower-income family might not have had on their radar, might not have been able to afford?
Oh, yeah. We are going to do quite a bit of outreach to the network that we are working on it to make sure they are aware of this opportunity.
And Sam, as you, I know we talked off air, you're shopping around for colleges, getting ready for those applications. Are you in your head as you approach this looking at things like how expensive is this college? Are the majors available to me something that it's going to be employable down the road?
Yeah, I mean, again, just it's about what you want to do. What are you going to enjoy when you're an adult and you're working in the workforce? And there are so many things that I'm interested in, and going to college is a good way to find interests. And of course, the cost is a really consequential thing. So it's definitely something that as a student you have to consider before diving into it without qualms.
And Masood, I know sometimes people push back on the idea that college is just about employability. Do you see value to a well-rounded education apart from what is the job the day after graduation?
Yeah, I do see it. As I said, this particular model is not just to get the higher education, but also build a relationship with different communities as well. You know, as I said, we just want to make sure that these kids actually do get the kinds of things and have a better future, and inclusivity is on the top of the list. So absolutely, I think there's much more than just the employability of the people who are going to borrow money.
Let's go back to our callers now. Marcus is with us in Milwaukee. Marcus, hi.
Hi. Hey, Rob. So I think this is a great topic, and I think that this is something that definitely needs to be discussed. The more education people have, the more well-rounded they are, and I also think it produces more understanding and subsequently produces stronger communities as a whole. Personally, I went to UWM. I graduated with a double master, a double major of political science and history, Then I started working on a master's of public administration and got through 24 of 42 credits. I got divorced and I had to drop out for a while. And I have $60,000 in student loan debts. And I have no way to get any money from FAFSA to go back to school because I was outside of, you know, like an expiration period. And so a program like this would have been absolutely fantastic because I come from a middle income family. I've been on my own for years. And, you know, something like this would have been absolutely critical. And I think it's a great program and a fantastic topic. And I'm glad you're addressing it.
Marcus, good luck to you with that debt and with your career. Masood, do you see this helping people pursue careers like maybe in public administration like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think it's critical.
All right. Thanks a lot for that call. Let's get a story now from Karen with us in Madison. Karen, hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my phone call. My story is very personal, like everyone's. First of all, I want to say that when I went to college, it cost me $265 a semester, and books were less than $100, and I went to the University of Wisconsin. And then when I returned to school to finish my degree, because I dropped out, I went to Edgewood, and I asked my dad. I said, Dad, I'll have to take out a loan to do this. And he said, well, Karen, it'll cost you less than a used car to do this. And it did. It was like a $7,000 loan. My sister is she graduated as a PA. She went back to school when her boys were in high school, and she became a PA, and her sons all had a physical illness that was very, it was not, they didn't know what it was, and her oldest son went to college at the university in Milwaukee while she was going to school here in Madison. And he died from the illness. Its severest consequence was deep depression, and they really didn't know what it was at the time. Her second son has the same.
Karen, I'm very sorry about the loss of your family. We don't have a lot of time, though, and I want to bring our guests back in. And Masood, Karen's starting point there, things are different today than a lot of people might have experienced when it comes to the costs of college.
Yeah, it had gone up substantially over time, and I think this is causing a lot of problem. But I think our goal here is to sit down with these parents and sit down with these kids and talk about what those barriers are and come up with a solution that works for them, for that particular family.
All right. Thanks for the call. And again, sorry about the loss in your family. Time, I think, for one more caller. We've got Sam with us in Madison. Sam, hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What do you want to bring up, Sam?
I think high school is really the time for finding what you're passionate about, finding what you want to do, and not college, not spending, you know, $20,000, $30,000 a year. And employability is a huge factor. You don't need to be passionate about your job as long as you've got a job that allows you to live the lifestyle you want to live.
Sam, thanks for the call. And Sam in the studio, do you feel like you have some of those opportunities in high school to try to figure out what you're passionate about?
Yeah, and I certainly agree. I think at my high school, there's certainly opportunities that give me abilities to explore what I enjoy. And that's part of the reason why I'm interested in what I am currently interested in. But we have to consider that there are also other situations and lower income schools and rural schools that maybe don't offer as many classes or so forth. So it's just something to consider when sometimes high school isn't really the place that can provide those opportunities.
And Masood, in just our last few moments, what's your timeline for getting this thing rolling?
Well, this is at a very early stage right now. I'm still looking for volunteers to come forward and help us with social media and website, putting together a list of mentors, and just going out and raising money. Providing a $25,000 seed money, you still have to raise $2 million to do that. But your listeners that are out there, you know, if they're interested, they can get back to me with and contact me, and then we can work together on some of these things.
And they can find you, Empowering Students for Success. What's the best way to find that online?
They can send me an email about makhtar623@gmail.com.
All right, Masood, thanks a lot for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having us.
Sam, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Masood Akhtar, entrepreneur and founder of the new nonprofit. We've been talking about Empowering Students for Success. And Sam Salkowski is with us, incoming senior at Mount Horeb High School. Coming up tomorrow on Central Time, the late H. Ross Perot led the most successful third-party presidential campaign in recent history. We'll look at the role of third parties and what it could take for a more high-profile performance in today's political landscape. And more couples are not changing anyone's last name after they get married. An expert on families tells us what that means about American culture, and you can share your experience. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time. Weekdays from 6 to 9 a.m., it's the morning show with Kate Archer Kent. Tomorrow at 6:30, Michigan and Illinois are legalizing marijuana. Is that going to have an impact on the Wisconsin side of the state lines? Join Kate and her guest for a look at neighbors with weed and what it means for us. That's tomorrow at 6:30 on the morning show. Up next is news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio. Then we talk to a doctor and motivational speaker about her Beyond Beautiful movement for girls and their parents. I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.